Now, from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, and Ryan O'Halloran.
Hey, folks, happy Thursday morning to you. Jaguars Today live on the air, live from Everbank Field. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, Ryan O'Halloran, as just introduced here. And, Ryan, you were making the point before the opening right there that, you know, if they play well and win, you're going to give them praise. Look, you'd rather a team win playing poorly than lose playing well, but those aren't the only options out there. Let's have, I think you're saying, a game where they started off very strong, got the Bears off the field, able to march down and put themselves in point-blank range. You think they're going to go up 7-0, and who knows how it plays out from that point on. And had they continued that kind of performance, they might have won that game going away, but they didn't. They did win it, though, but what a stagnant period from that first drive until the beginning of the fourth quarter.
Yeah, and they decided, okay, they're just going to throw it. I mean, they had to because their running game wasn't doing anything, and they were running out of possessions because even though the defense was stopping them on third down in the second half, time was running out. So, you know, instead of beating your head against the wall like they normally do, they decided to change it up on the fly, and it worked. I think that's something they should revisit going forward. But this team has to be stronger mentally to overcome that first drive. I mean, you move down the field with relative ease. Didn't like the play call on second and goal from the one.
No one did. Maybe Mercedes.
Well, he did. Penalty on third and goal from the one. Then you get third and six. Not a great throw, but a drop pass interception. It's just like then there was just like this block for two and a half quarters. Got to be able to bounce back and overcome that kind of
stuff.
Who
is Bortles ticked at? Because he was furious when he came off the field after the interception. Was he mad at himself?
Usually that's usually his MO. I've never seen him really go demonstrative against a player. So I think from his perspective, he probably thought he could have given Allen a better ball to catch.
Yeah, I think he could have, but, you know, to put a percentage, I think they're both somewhat at fault. I said 70-30, Robinson, still as a Pro Bowl receiver, need to catch that.
Which he said he should have.
But also, you're the franchise quarterback. You need to put that one on a dime, right?
And regardless of whether you agree or disagree with the play call on second and goal, you have Mercedes Lewis against Chris Brzezinski. Give him a chance to catch the
ball.
Right,
give him a better ball.
So, you know, things sort of snowballed from there. The penalty on Beecham. You know, whether he flinched a fingertip or whatever, regardless, it's 5 yards, so that means you got to pass. So.
But you put yourself in a situation where you're lining up on third and less than a yard in shotgun. Yeah. Anyway, you know, I just didn't like that whole sequence right there.
Yeah, and it took him a while to obviously snap out of that. But I'll give Bortles and the offense credit. They made a couple winning plays down the stretch. And then the defense after not great first half, disappointing first half, woke up and did everything but cause a turnover.
All right, well,
I still think they should have been able to put some more pressure on Hoyer, and they started blitzing more in the second half to create that.
We'll put that in the rear view. We'll talk about a few more performances from that game, I'm sure, throughout the course of the next 2 hours. But we'll look ahead today to the Oakland Raiders coming into town. Also today, our fan feedback question of the day is presented by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships. There's a particularly big performance by a Jaguar player that occurred on this date. We'll get to that coming up later. So we asked you today, what is your favorite single game performance? Doesn't have to be statistically the best performance that a Jaguar player has ever had. Just what is one that really stands out to you as a guy that without that on that day, there's no way the Jags would have won. It has a special place in your memory bank for whatever reason. So what is your favorite Jaguar single game performance all time? And you can hit us up on Twitter at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at Ryan O'Halloran. Jaguars Today Facebook page up and rolling. You can text us and call us at the same number, 641-1010. Text line driven by Duval Ford. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Ryan O'Halloran here with you. We're going to hear from Blake today. We'll hear a little bit from Todd Wash, Gus Bradley. Tony was in the locker room yesterday pulling in a bunch of sound, so we'll get to some of that as we get you ready for Jaguar football coming up in just 3 days, trying to get to 3-3. Live at Everbank, it's Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
That's a good start. I thought the walkthrough was really crisp, both sides of the ball. I know I talked to Washer, he thought defensively one of our best walkthroughs that we've had. So, and I felt, you know, watching the offensive side too. So, good start.
All right, good crisp walkthrough, O'Halloran. Eye roller that you are. Man, he's a knee slapping eye roller right
Hopefully
now.
That clip was selected with to get that response.
It was just the first question asked to Gus Bradley.
Probably his. That's probably his open.
Has Blake gotten off
to a good question.
Start?
First question. That's right. He didn't have an opening statement.
No, he just walked in and said questions.
Questions, please.
That's right.
So there you have it. I've got a question. Who's this guy to my immediate right? Oh, he's Jaguars sideline reporter.
Ricky Ballou.
Rick Ballou.
Good to be here.
Star of the Midday Chalk. What's up, man?
I'm interested in hearing from Greg Olson, who will speak in 10 minutes. We all know the questions that have been asked and need to be asked about why things take so long to get going, the hurry-up offense, the no-huddle. We see a little bit more of that perhaps earlier in the game as opposed to when it's only in desperation mode. So I'm looking forward to the Q&A coming up in 10 minutes.
Will there ever be another 100-yard rusher in a single game by one single individual in Jaguar team history? Yeah. I'm not sure. They did have a combined 100-yard game out of Ivory and Yeldon going back to the London game. If you, Rick, are Greg Olson this week, mm-hmm. and you're looking at the Raiders giving up the most passing yards per game, giving up 4.8 yards per carry on the ground, what's your priority to get this offense going?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I think that most teams believe that if you run, you can set up the pass. I wonder if it's the exact opposite now. If you're able to pass as it set up the run, 2 weeks ago, actually three, in London against Indianapolis was their most successful rushing attack of the season, and it happened what? When their tight ends were out, Thomas couldn't go, Lewis got hurt, Sterling doesn't block well, so they spread out the defense with three wide receivers, and they did have some success. I don't expect them to do that right out of the gate because obviously you are going to play your tight ends, but you know, this is a soft defense. They're very good offensively, but you can get them on the ground and in the air. I think it's going to be somewhat of a balanced attack, but I did like that first drive before the interception. I mean, Bortles did a nice job throwing the football, getting guys involved, especially A-Rob. That would be my game plan right out of the gate against Oakland.
Yeah, I would throw it from the start. They're not very good in the secondary. The other thing I do, and me and Frank talked about this the other night, was it doesn't seem like the running backs are able to get in any kind of rhythm. I would tell T.J. Yeldon, it's your ball this week. So you're going to be on the field in third down. See if that can change things up because it feels like even when they have a good run, they come out of the game. You know, these are both field backs, and maybe they need 15 carries or so. They're going to try and run it. We know that, even though they may not be successful. But I sort of side Rick is like, okay, come out, get the crowd in the game by throwing it. Go to your best guys. Those are Robinson, Hearns, and Thomas. I think Julius Thomas getting involved. First catch wasn't until 7:05 of the fourth quarter. That's got to change. So the people are there in the passing game. You don't know if the people are there in the run game.
Why Yeldon, would you say, as opposed to Ivory?
I think he's, of the two, he's shown a little bit more of a spark, and I think he's really shown you a lot in the passing game, whereas if it's Ivory in there, maybe you're just are committing to the run at that point. But it's 6-1, half in the dozen, I think, but I would give TJ more of a shot because he at least has done some explosive things in the pass game.
Rick, a lot of people looking at this as a measuring stick kind of game because, you know, similarities between how the two teams and the time frame in which they were rebuilt, both selecting their franchise quarterback, at least they hope they will long-term be their franchise quarterbacks in the same year. Is that a fair assessment? Is this a team that Jaguar fans should be watching to kind of gauge their own progress?
Absolutely. I mean, you can go back to the combine in February. I went around and either on air or just people that I talk with there, the two teams, this was pre-draft, obviously, after free agency, the two teams that they thought in the NFL had improved the most were Oakland and Jacksonville. And they're very similar, what they've done in the draft, what they've done in free agency. I couldn't believe, as I was getting ready to put together my piece for the pregame show on Sunday, that it's been 13 consecutive years that the Raiders have not had a winning season. I mean, that just blows my mind. You got to go back to their Super Bowl loss to Tampa Bay when they were 11-5 under Bill Callahan. Since then, they've had 9 different coaches, but it's a different feeling now with Jack Del Rio. They think they've got the right guy. They've got the right quarterback. We've seen Jack be more aggressive as opposed to when he was here in Jacksonville as far as his offense. This is a huge measuring stick. I think just about everyone now would say Carr is the better quarterback than Bortles. Of course, Blake has not played as well this year. So this game is big for so many reasons, including that, taking a look at yourself against another team which has clearly gone through the entire rebuild situation.
It seems like John Gruden took the game plan to Tampa with him and then shared it with the rest of the league as far as the Raiders go. Rick, since we got you here, let's just talk about your role as a sideline reporter over the last few years. And what is, you know, obviously you hear things that some you can pass along, some you can't. But what is one of the cool aspects of being down there? Like, give us something that you see or learn from field level that you wouldn't necessarily if you're in the booth or watching it on TV.
Appreciation for the game, just how fast the game is, how if you're a split second late, the guy is by you, how strong and their technique. And you know, when I was covering college full-time in Tallahassee back in the day, they used to let me on the sideline both in the Orange Bowl and over in the Swamp. Those are the two games a year that I used to always be on the field, you know, every other year because they're home and away. And that was very fast, and that was exciting to be there for all those games. But it absolutely pales in comparison. You can tell when a guy's taking a bad angle. You can tell if a guy is not running the right route. So just to be out there and, you know, what you hear and what you see is spectacular. But the thing that sticks out for me more than anything is when you got a healthy J.J. Watt, or, you know, you got a healthy Daryl Revis or whoever it is, and you're watching how great they are as far as their technique and what they're able to do. I know you can see it from the stands and you can see it from the press box, but being down there that close to it is pretty incredible.
You're absolutely right about that. Because I've talked about this for years. You know, in the early days before 9/11, you used to be able to go down the final 2 minutes. And I distinctly remember a game in the 96 season when they're playing Baltimore here, and Jermaine Lewis ran a little like out and up, and it was just like how he got from point A to point B. It was in the blink of an eye, and to see that 10 feet away from you, it's mind-boggling. And also the level of violence. I saw Keenan McCardell once get absolutely destroyed on one you think he's not going to get up and walk away from. Then I looked up and watched the replay on the Jumbotron, and it just looked like just another play.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But being there 20 feet away and seeing that and almost feeling the impact, it's crazy what these guys step into on a weekly basis.
Yeah, and then it's cool to hear. I mean, you know, I may give a quarter of or a third of what I hear because I'm right behind the bench, and obviously some things just wouldn't make any sense to report or to talk about because it's part of their game plan, and the Jags are very cool about that because they allow me to be there and they're accessible, but also I know my role that, yes, this is something that I should talk about as opposed to, no, this is something that I should probably
just
keep to
myself.
You're not
an investigative reporter out there. That's not the role. All right, Rick Ballew coming up on the Midday Chalk today in 90 minutes. You'll hear what Greg Olson had to say, among other stuff.
I'm going to go over there right now. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks for stopping by. Rick Ballew here with us in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studio. Jaguars Today, Ryan O'Halloran is joining him as they head on down the hall, Tony, to talk with Greg Olson. If you're Greg Olson this week, same kind of question. I think I know because we talk all the time about this. Similar thing, let's spread this team out. Not that you're going to throw 80% of the time, but like Rick said, maybe spread them out a little bit. Hit them with the run out of those kind of formations, but just be a little bit more aggressive against the worst-ranked pass or defense in the National Football League.
I think you got to be, and I think the topic of conversation, you know, throughout the day yesterday with everybody that was talking, with Blake Bortles, the guys in the locker room, with Gus Bradley after practice yesterday afternoon, the topic is obviously the up-tempo offense and how much of it we're going to see this week. And they're not tipping their hand as far as this is what we're going to do this week. But you certainly get the sense that you're going to see more of it earlier in this football game than we have to this point because it is about tempo and it is about getting to a point where their guys are playing fast. My guess is that you see a game plan that's kind of similar to what we saw early last week. The first play of the game against the Chicago Bears was a bootleg, like 15-yard pass to Allen Robinson. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's a similar type call against the Oakland Raiders to try to get that kind of thing kickstarted. I'm not saying that I want to see them go no-huddle up-tempo from the very beginning of the game. I think you script that first drive, and if the first drive works, fantastic. On your second drive, you go up-tempo. And if you script that first drive and it doesn't work, and it's your second drive, you go up-tempo. I think it's time to see that kind of thing to see if that can kickstart this offense that has been in neutral for the most part this year. Really, last week, against the Chicago Bears was the first time they've been able to get much done on the first drive of the season. So if they feel like they have a better plan than they had through the first four games, that's fine to get things started. But I think Blake needs to be in that up-tempo to allow him to relax. That doesn't mean that you run it the whole game, but I think you run it earlier to get him into it and hopefully get that passing game started against a team that, quite frankly, can't defend the pass.
I want to remind folks today, Tony, that we're giving away another pair of tickets to this Jags-Raiders game coming up. Plus, the winner of the tickets will be qualified to go into a drawing for dinner with Sendarek Marks at Three Forks and also earn a set of Jaguar-themed rings courtesy of Global Diamonds. So be listening for old standby, right, the Steal the Show lady. Tyler, do you have her ready to
steal? You can't have a newcomer come in and steal the show.
That's clever. I really do. The next time you hear that lovely young lady say that exact phrase, be the, let's say, fifth caller at 641-1010. We'll hook you up with a pair of tickets to go see Jags and Raiders coming up this weekend. Coming up in just a few moments, as Rick and Ryan are down the hall talking with Greg Olson, we will hear what Todd Wash, Blake Bortles, Gus Bradley, and others had to say yesterday in preparation for Week 7 in the National Football League, the sixth game of the year, obviously, for your Jacksonville Jaguars. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith here with you. And the fan feedback question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. Once again, what is your favorite single game performance all time by any Jacksonville Jaguar? You can tweet us up. You know the Twitter handles if you've been listening to the show for any period of time, or hit us up on the Jaguars Today Facebook page, the text line, the phone lines. It's all out there for you. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith here with you. Jaguars Today live at Everbank on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM. Folks, 1 week fantasy football for cash. That's FanDuel. You know the drill. Hey, Thursday night is here. You can get in on this Thursday night action if you like Green Bay and Chicago, like any of the matchups. Early word is Ty Montgomery, the wide receiver for the Green Bay Packers, may get the start at running back tonight, despite the fact that they traded for Nile Davis. Eddie Lacy and James Starks banged up, so look for that. Maybe you want a sneaky play on Ty Montgomery tonight. The beauty of it is you may not have drafted Ty Montgomery. It doesn't matter in FanDuel. You pick your team fresh every single week. You're always going to get a fair and level playing field. They have beginner contests for rookie players only, experienced player badges so you know who you're up against, and more single entry contests than ever. Your best lineup versus everyone else's. Get five free entries now at FanDuel.com to NFL Beginner 50-50 contest by using promo code Mike, M-I-K-E. Go to FanDuel.com, enter promo code Mike. You're going to get five free entries, one per week for the next 5 weeks. And the value of those entries all the way up to $50. That's FanDuel.com. Use promo code Mike, FanDuel.com. FanDuel.com.
Jaguars Daily is brought to you by Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the official sports medicine provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
On Sunday, the Jaguars will play host to the Oakland Raiders. Yesterday, head coach Gus Bradley addressed the media and talked about how good the Raiders' pass offense is.
He's playing with really good poise. He's very accurate, and that's what he told our defense. This one, you know, this is a big challenge for us defensively, big challenge. They're really... I mean, I know against Kansas City they struggle at times, but for the most part, I mean, they're averaging a lot of points, and they've been very efficient, productive. Their run game with their pass game is intermediate. They take shots, so they're, you know, have ability to put up a lot of points.
This has been Jaguars Daily, brought to you by JOI. I'm Jordan DeArmond.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, I'm officially, Tony, caught up on fantasy start sick questions at the moment. As far as I'm going back, at least, I am. I don't know if I'm caught up, but I feel like I am on Twitter. Tony and I'll have the Your Jacks Fantasy Football Show coming up on Saturday night at 11, Sunday morning at 11:30 on CW17. You can also catch our latest podcast on 1010XL.com, which will be posted sometime later on this afternoon. We knocked that one in. This morning, we were talking about Nile Davis in relation to the Packers. Rob Domofsky, who covers the Pack for ESPN, was on Sirius this morning and said he expects Ty Montgomery to be the lead guy. He's a wide receiver. He did run the ball some last week for Green Bay and knows the playbook, obviously, more so than Nile Davis would. So he expects him to be the lead guy. I'm not looking to play too many Green Bay running backs tonight. No. Or I mean, look, if you got Montgomery he may be a sneaky play because you probably get him as a wide receiver. He's going to get running back touches tonight in your lineup. So he may not be the worst option for you there in some leagues. But we move on as we digress. Let's get to a little sound from yesterday, starting with the quarterback of the Jacksonville Jaguars, Blake Bortles. We've been talking about it all week long. Blake was asked, did going to the no huddle help get the offense going this past game against the Bears?
You know, I think we were able to find a rhythm. I thought we did a good job, kind of handling the adversity. Things were going our way. Ole, calls for kind of a mix-up, go no huddle, try something new. And I thought, he did a good job of calling plays, did a good job of the communication aspect of it, everybody being on the same page without huddling. I thought we protected extremely well, ran good routes, and were able to move the ball down the field.
Yeah, he mentioned the protection there. The pass protection has been pretty darn good for the Jaguars at this point this season. Obviously, the run blocking leaves a lot to be desired to this point in the 2016 season. We'll see if they can get that figured out. But a follow-up question to that is the one that we've been asking basically since Blake got here. But why do you appear to be so much more comfortable in that up-tempo offense?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's, it's kind of you're out there just – playing, I think it's easier to find a rhythm, I believe, I don't really have an answer for you. I feel comfortable in it, feel good in it. I feel as though our offense feels good and comfortable in it, and we do a good job of moving the ball, so it's definitely good to see that, have confidence in that package.
All expecting a little bit more of it this week. We won't belabor the point here with Blake. Let's jump ahead to cut number six, where he's asked about Julius Thomas, and it has been difficult to get him more involved given the limited routes that he's been running.
It's something we work on every week. How can we target 80 and get him the ball and get him some good looks and put him in some right, in the right position to make a play and, formationally get it tailored up to him so we can kind of have a good coverage or a coverage we want and, put him on the best route possible. So it's definitely a weekly process of trying to, find unique ways to get him involved. And it's, on my part to give him the opportunity to make plays.
This one's a bit of a mystery, Tony, because, look, if the Jags were scoring 28, 30 points a game and Julius Thomas wasn't heavily involved, who would care, right? Because they're getting it done. They're moving the football. But they're not. That's not the situation that they're in. And you think this guy can be a mismatch against linebackers or defensive backs, one or the other. Either he's going to be quicker or stronger than whoever's lining up across from him. And, as good as we've seen him look on the practice field, they have yet to really establish that consistent rhythm.
No, they haven't, and it's not a football team that's scoring 28 points a week, and it's not a team that seems to be establishing anybody in the offense. And I think when Allen Robinson, Allen Hurns, Julius Thomas, when all those guys aren't getting going in games, then the bullseye's on Blake more so than those guys and whatever they're doing or not doing during the games if none of them are having that kind of success. Let's jump ahead to cut eight here. And we talked a moment ago about how good they've been in pass protection, but they have had struggles in the run game and trying to get that done. And Blake was asked about challenging the offensive line to pick it up in the run game.
I think it's a continual effort. We know it's there, right? We ran for 100-plus yards against Indy. We have the ability to do it. We've shown that. It's just about finding the consistency. We've added a couple extra things, doing some extra things in walkthrough in the running game, kind of paying a little more close attention to it to get it going and get it started because we know we have the ability to. We have the backs and the guys up front that can create holes and make plays.
All right, here's an interesting one. We'll skip ahead again because he talks about the pass protection. Like you said, it's been pretty good compared to certainly the run blocking, but is there one specific thing that Blake feels like he can improve on?
Obviously, everything can improve. I would think, continue to take care of the ball, obviously. I think for me, it's just decision-making and continuing to make quick decisions. Continuing to get the ball out, continuing to get it in guys' hands quickly and let them make plays with space.
Yeah, continue to take care of the ball. Continue to emphasize it, maybe. And you can argue, the interception may not have been on him. That's fine. The bottom line is he's got now 9 turnovers. Was it 9 or – yeah, I think it's 9, right?
7. Sounds right.
Yeah, I think it's 9. I think he had 7 coming into the game. So with the fumble and the interception, it's definitely got to be better in that area.
Yeah, and I think he says continue to make fast decisions. I think it's time for him to start making
right, exactly.
Decisions.
I mean, I think these are – continuing goals that he's not hitting at this point in time.
Yeah, and I think the last question here for Blake, and it's a question that a couple different guys got asked yesterday, was basically about what does it take for this football team to get itself on a roll?
You know, I think the attention to detail and the consistency and being locked in on every single play is what it's going to take. You know, I think the mental lapses and mental errors that take place are unacceptable, and I think the only way you kind of get rid of those is by making sure you're locked in on every play, and it's, you know, not just doing it on Sunday. It's doing it throughout the week at practice, at walkthroughs, you know, kind of making sure, you know, if you have any questions, you get them answered, and by Sunday you're ready to go and have seen all that looks possible.
Yeah, that's it within your control, right? Sometimes you're not going to be faster than the other guy or stronger than the other guy. Sometimes they're just going to beat you even if you are. It's just, you know, that's football. But not, you know, having the proper mental preparation, not knowing what you're supposed to be doing out there, is that's a major concern to me as we head into week 7 of the season. Let's flip it to the other side. Todd Wash, Jaguars defense coordinator, spoke with the media yesterday like Greg Olsen, the OC, is doing right now. And Wash was asked about Jalen Ramsey. You know, we've seen him match up with T.Y. Hilton. We've seen him match up with Alshon Jeffrey. Don't know how they plan to utilize him this week, but Wash was asked if he's comfortable matching up Ramsey on the opponent's best wide receiver.
You know, it's nice. You know, we were blessed, you know, obviously with a good corner, a couple of good corners in Seattle. And we're blessed now, where I think we got three good corners. But you know, we've always known that Jalen's going to be special. And when they have a marquee wide receiver, you know, we're going to challenge him each and every week. So his preparation during the week was great. Obviously, we know that Jeffrey's caught a couple balls on him, but I think they get paid too. So it's a situation. You know, we feel real comfortable with him right now, matching up on people.
Yeah, I kind of opened my eyes yesterday at that press conference when he said, I know we got three really good corners on this team right now. And I was like, oh, bye-bye, house. Mm. Like, he's not even – it's part of his mindset right now. And he was actually asked about that a little bit later on. But before we get to that, he was asked, does the team gain confidence because of the level at which the back end, the cornerbacks, are playing right now?
You know, I think there is. You know, we've done some real good things versus some good quarterbacks. Now, this week we probably have one of the better quarterbacks that we've faced. We're going to have a great challenge this week. But, you know, they're playing with confidence. They're playing, obviously, within the scheme and executing. And they see if we do that, you know, we give ourselves a chance. So I think we're excited as a staff and they're excited as players.
A lot of talk about up-tempo on offense for the Jaguars, and some of the parting line has been we don't go to that early because if it doesn't work, you're putting your defense in a bad situation, those kind of things.
Yeah, this was kind of funny.
This is Wash asked if he is consulted in these situations when the offense decides to go up-tempo.
No. I mean, I'll be honest with you, I don't know what happens on that side of the ball until we see it on Monday. So, I don't really get caught up in whatever they do. You know, they're going to do the best they can so they have success, and we're going to do the best things that we need to do to have success. Now, we talk about it as a staff, obviously, earlier in the week, but during the game, I have really no clue.
Yeah, he's over there getting his guys ready. He's correcting what they did on the last drive or stressing they need to do more of it, whatever the case may be.
Yeah, he basically said, there was a follow-up there that I didn't include, but basically said, yeah, we just have to make our adjustments faster when they start going to the no huddle. But no, they do not consult with us when they decide to go do something like that. Todd Wash also asked about, does the way Jalen played against Alshon Jeffrey make you more comfortable matching him up against other teams' number ones going forward?
Yeah, it does. You know, he was playing against a big, long wide receiver that did a nice job of getting open there in the first half. But, you know, Jalen made some adjustments at halftime and did some things that he knew he needed to do. And because it's hard to get a look in practice from a guy like Jeffries. So he made some adjustments and made some real nice plays in the second half. But, we feel comfortable with our back end. We're very excited about him.
All right, more from the Jags locker room a little bit later on with Gus Bradley. We'll find out when Ryan O'Halloran rejoins us here in a moment what Greg Olsen had to say this morning. We've also got This Date in Football and the Honda Drive Around in the NFL coming up right around the corner. You know how to get in all the various ways. Question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush Family Dealerships. What is your all-time favorite single-game performance by any Jaguar individual? We'll get to those coming up a little bit later on. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Ryan O'Halloran here with you. It's Jaguars Today, live at Everbank on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
And now, This Date in Football History.
All right, let's get to it. October 20th through the years. How about Jacksonville? 1996 Jacksonville Jaguar wide receiver Keenan McCardell caught 16 passes in the Jaguars' 17-14 loss, unfortunately,
good?
At St. Louis. 16 is a lot, over 200 yards receiving. Unfortunately, Mark Brunell turned it over quite frequently that day, and the Jags could not pull down a victory. That was the genesis of our question today. What is your favorite single-game performance by a Jacksonville Jaguar? You can still tweet and post your answers to that throughout the course of the next hour. Famous birthdays for this date How about the first overall pick in Tampa Bay Bucks history, Leroy Salmon, first overall pick in 1976 in the NFL draft, and the Bucks selected him, of course. He would go on to become MVP, defensive MVP of the league in 1979, and a slew of Pro Bowls to his name. Leroy Salmon passed away, however, at the age of 56, way back in 1991, so not long after his playing career ended. Herman Moore, NFL wide receiver born in this date, four-time Pro Bowler, three-time first-team All-Pro. He's 47 today.
Let me guess.
Oh, I'm sorry. You wanted to guess the age.
I was going
to
say 43.
You would have been off by 4 years. Riddell Anthony, former Gator wide receiver, former Tampa Bay Buck wide receiver. How old today, Ryan O'Halloran?
42.
40 on the nose. 40, 1976. Linebacker for the New England Patriots, Jamie Collins. He's been a Pro Bowler. How old is he today?
26.
He is 27 today. Oh. Yeah, born in 1989. And finally, Cincinnati running back Jeremy Hill was born on this date. How many years ago?
25.
24. If we gave you the plus or minus, we gave you the margin for error, you'd be nailing all these. But unfortunately, we did not. Those are the significant birthdays we came up with, and that is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Oakland Raiders owner Mark Davis appears to be intent on moving his franchise to Las Vegas. One source said, quote, Mark Davis said that he was committed to Las Vegas 100%, that there were several market studies being done by the Raiders there. Davis reportedly plans to file papers to move his team from Oakland to Vegas in January. Vegas has already committed $750 million in public money toward building a new stadium for the Raiders. The New York Jets have benched quarterback Ryan Fitzpatrick and are starting Geno Smith this weekend against Baltimore, so maybe all of that training camp time does matter. As Fitz has gone 1-5 this season, leads the league in interceptions with 11 as he gets benched. There are some who believe that Bryce Petty will be the Jets starter sooner rather than later to get a look at the fourth round pick from the 2015 draft. Eddie Lacy and James Starks unavailable for the Green Bay Packers tonight until Monday. They were also the only two running backs on the Packers roster. They traded for Nile Davis from Kansas City, but the word coming out of Green Bay right now is that Ty Montgomery, the wide receiver, could be the one getting the first running back reps for the Green Bay Packers tonight. So, that's a tough one to figure out.
That's me tuning in.
Jordan Reed talked yesterday about his latest concussion, saying that he has no plans to retire, and also discussed openly that he basically tried to hide the concussion from his team, saying, quote, I kind of kept it to myself. I had a pretty bad headache. I was feeling it throughout the game and kept playing. The next day, I was feeling all right, and then there were some exercises I started doing and started to feel a little bit worse. Reed missed the Washington game last week against Philadelphia. He is practicing on a limited basis right now, but he is still in the concussion protocol. He's hoping to be cleared on Friday, so he would be available this weekend. But trying to hide it from the team, that's a guy who's been there, done that on the concussion front. Not sure that's the smartest thing to do, Jordan.
Might not be the smartest thing to do. It just goes to show you the length these guys will go to not miss playing time, right? I mean, it's and he realizes the position he's in right now. He better be happy that he got to sign an extension with the Washington Redskins. Could you imagine if he took another concussion absence into free agency? I mean, who would touch that guy right now? I hope the best for him. He did get in some individual work yesterday. Ryan, this one you should knock out of the ballpark, okay? It's not his birthday today, but tell me exactly how many years old Justin Timberlake is.
Oh. 35. Happy birthday, JT.
It's not his birthday. January 31st. We'll do something special for him next year, okay, when he turns 36. Let's get out to the phones before we get more from Ryan on what Greg Olson had to say. We've got Alan next up in East Arlington at 641-1010. Good morning, Alan.
Hey, good morning to you guys. First, let me say that I'm a Jaguar fan. I want them to win. I wish they would win. But how in the world could anybody that's not a fan, I mean, supposedly the media is unbiased and so forth, how could Jacksonville be favored this Sunday looking at the history, looking at just how each of the teams have performed? I just don't get it. I'm going to the game. I'm wanting to win.
I hear you. Well, let me ask you, do you think the guys in Las Vegas are biased towards it, or do you think they have an accent? They install the Jags as a 1-point favorite in this game. And those, you know, guys are as cutthroat and, you know, without emotion, going to evaluate the situation, you know?
Well, I think they look at a couple of factors. One is the West Coast, the East Coast, even though the sure. Raiders have done it already this year. But they look at the numbers, and they look at a Jaguar defense that is stopping some people. They look at a Raider defense that just statistically is not stopping anybody.
Right.
And a Jaguar skill position group that could be able to take advantage of that. I mean, they built in 3 points usually for home field, so they probably think the Raiders are the better team.
It could be.
It started at 1.5. I'm surprised it has only gone down to 1. But, you know, they want to avoid a pick 'em.
Sure.
But they'll probably, you know, be interested to see where it ends up.
And honestly, from a Vegas point of view, when you look at this matchup between the Jags and Raiders, Oakland's 3-0 on the road, right? And a team that plays defense the way the Oakland Raiders play defense, that's not 3-0 on the road.
Right.
Right. I mean, at some point, it's going to break.
They won a game on a 2-point conversion final moment, or else you'd be looking at a, you know, a 3-3 team, not much removed from what the Jaguars are right now. Look, Alan, nobody is sitting here going to guarantee a Jaguar victory, that's for sure, and I can understand your skepticism. But like you said, go to the game. Who cares what anybody predicts, really, honestly? You know, whether it's us or Vegas or anybody, just go and enjoy it and root like crazy for the Jags to win. I don't think – I mean, it's certainly – this is the NFL, man. This would not shock me in the least if the Jaguars win on Sunday.
It's not Denver during Gus's first year where they were a 22-point dog or whatever,
right?
Where it felt like if you stayed within 2 touchdowns, you won.
It was an accomplishment.
Right. That's not what this is. This is – I mean, this is a team trying to get back to 500. Do you know the last time that the Jacksonville Jaguars were 500 or better in October or later?
Oh, in October? I was going to say
2007.
That might be. I was going to say last year, but that, you know, thinking
they were 1-1 last year,
right,
but in October or later
you qualified it. I'm going to say 2010.
They beat the Buffalo Bills to get the 3-3. They wound up that season 8-8. That was the last full season.
That's the year they went to Indy, right?
Yeah,
with a chance to win the
division. Last full season under Del Rio.
Okay,
is the last time they were 500 or better in October.
Yikes. Well, that's a milestone waiting to happen for the Gus Bradley regime coming up this weekend.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I'd love to see it, man. I don't care. Again, do I think a 3-3 is a record of how good they are? I don't know. Maybe. Probably.
You are what
I mean,
record says you are in this league.
You are what your record says you are. And they've lost, as we've highlighted, and we beat into the ground over the first 3 weeks, a couple of games they could have won. Should they or could they have lost against the Bears? Absolutely. But they didn't. So go beat Oakland, get the 500. You figure with Houston going to Denver on Monday Night Football, I have a feeling they may know the strengths and weaknesses of one Brock Osweiler out there in the Mile High City. So, you know, if Houston loses and you got Tennessee playing Indy, only one of them can win this weekend. Jags would be right in the thick of it if they win, but they have to win to get that done. What did you hear from Greg Olsen today?
A couple things. For those keeping score, it was 19 questions. Talked about the comparisons between Derek Carr and Blake Bortles, and both, you know, in terms of mentality, approach, says there's a lot of those. And one thing he says, they survived those rookie years. Carr had to play right away, lost his first 10 games. Blake won 3 out of 10 his first year. Yeah, that is right, 3 and 10. So talked about that. And also the run game is, he says they're exhausting everything. He says it's about blocking better, the running back showing more patience to find some of those yards. And then also one thing he said is would help the run game is you got to convert third down and stay on the field. And he said the third down problems were missed throws on everybody, guys were open, drops. And because it really wasn't pass protection against Chicago,
right?
So,
combination of Blake and the pass game.
Yeah, I mean I had maybe more drops in the first 4 games combined. So, it's he remains. Obviously, he's going to say he remains confident, but he said Oakland's defense, you know, in terms of, he says the numbers are a little deceiving. He says they're doing a lot of things different in terms of their coverage and pressure than they did last year. Which probably means it's more Del Rio stamp than just letting Ken Norton run the defense. That's what I think.
Well, they jumped on Kansas City 7-0 right away last week, and the Chiefs just stayed patient and just continued to run the football and really just ran it down their throat throughout the course of the afternoon, and won a very easy kind of pulling away 26-10 victory. So we'll see if the Jags can give the Raiders another defeat this weekend. We've got Doc in Mandarin next on the line this morning here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Doc.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Great.
I'm a long-time caller. I hadn't called recently. quite honestly, been a little deflated about the attitude of the Jaguars and my attitude towards what they're doing. And I just wanted to make a comment. I love the Jaguars, and I know that Gus Bradley's a really fine man. But I would like to point to the incident at the last game in Chicago where he went into the locker room and showed a different side of his personality. And I think that if you'll notice, all the players responded in a positive way. And when after the game they said, hey, we needed it, I would make the suggestion that perhaps the atmosphere is a little too easy down there. They need to push these guys past their comfort zone. And I think that the potential is there. I believe we've got as much talent as 80 to 90% of any of the teams that are out there. But we're not getting them in schemes. We're not disciplined enough to allow them to win.
Fair points. In terms of Gus's halftime speech / tongue lashing, you know, guys were quick to say, hey, we needed it. But if he did that every time, eventually guys would tune him out. So a different side of him sort of woke guys up, and it may have not shown offensively for a quarter. It may have made a difference on defense. In terms of pushing these players, the rules don't allow you to push them a lot physically during the week. In terms of who knows what goes behind the scenes and whether they're getting called out in front of their peers during the tape review or for mistakes during practice. But to the last point, Doc, is this does seem to be sometimes a staff that is slow to react. Should they have gone to the no huddle earlier? Should they have tried to just scrap the run earlier? Should they have tried to pressure more on third down earlier in the game? So they made those adjustments and just in time.
Doc, thank you for the call. And, yeah, just in this case, they won. So you say, hey, you know what? The bottom line, they did what they set out to achieve. But the reason you critique is so looking forward, how many of these issues are going to continue to crop up? What are they clearing up? It's a lot easier to look back and say, hey, we should have done this earlier, but we won anyway, right?
Yeah.
Now you hopefully take that, internalize that lesson. Every week's a different game, however, so we'll see if they do come out firing early against the Oakland Raiders. Thank you for the call there, Doc, 641-1010. If you out there in listener land would like to get in, that's a number for the text line as well. I got a few interesting ones directed towards Ryan O'Halloran that will throw his way coming back.
What'd I do?
Nothing. Right. Just why do you just suspect questions. It's there questions for you? Ryan O'Halloran, the second most popular weekly co-host on Jaguars Today.
God, I like that one.
Right?
Yes, that's a promo, Tyler.
All right. We'll do that when we return in just a moment. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Ryan O'Halloran. It is Jaguars Today, live at EverBank on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at EverBank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, we continue along Jaguars Today live at EverBank. You can always send questions for our esteemed guest hosts via the text line at 641-1010, driven by Duval Ford, particularly for the top two hosts like Loggeman and O'Halloran holding down those top spots. I wonder how Garrard's going to feel about this tomorrow to find out. I assume he knows he's number three. By the way, they've got some cool stuff going on right now with David Garrard that I'm going to get to. With Retro Fitness, I'll tell you about coming up in just a minute. They've extended their great deal that they had running through December 1st all the way to January 1st. We'll get to that, but I've got some questions for Ryan O'Halloran on the text line. Ryan,
fire away.
This one coming in. Ryan described the left side of the offensive line as a dumpster fire during the preseason / training camp time. What does he think now?
I forgot about that.
All right, well, what do you think now?
Well, it's... It's pretty much has been that because there's been no continuity. And that's what I was sort of getting at is, you know, it's impossible to predict how they're going to play. But Beecham has missed a game. Jokel's out for the year. Reed started a game. Omame is now the left guard. And I think that's proved to be true. Beecham has been okay. He's getting better. Omame was okay. But the fact that you don't really know week in, week out, who's going to be the guy, maybe now it's settled down. That's what I was sort of getting at before the year, is I felt it was either going to be a Beecham thing, couldn't stay healthy, combined with a Jokel wasn't going to take the left guard, and they would have to make a change there. And that's turned out to be true, although not through that particular avenue.
Although they have a chance now, I think, going forward to solidify things with these same five guys. They have to make a massive improvement in the run game. But as we've talked about, they've been okay in pass protection.
Mm-hmm. I mean, because Blake had the two sacks. That was the only times he was knocked down against Chicago. Was it two?
Has it been since he's had a game like that?
Yeah, it's been a while. I mean, they've been pretty steady. You're used to have games where he was sacked four times and knocked down eight others.
Right.
But you watch the what the Bears did, a lot of twists and stunts, and they seemed to pick up their guys. There weren't any free blitzers. Greg also made an interesting point talking about T.J. Yeldon today that they've only had two mental breakdowns in terms of protections from the running backs in five games where there was just a guy that was free. So that happened a lot last year when you had a rookie tailback. So like you said, Mike, if everybody can stay healthy, maybe that will improve the production.
Got another. These are back-to-back tweets. When you're talking earlier about, you said Yeldon, you'd give the ball to Yeldon this week. I asked you why. This one, let me get both of them out and you can reply to it. The only between the tackles successful runs have been with Ivory. Is Ryan O watching the same team? And then he followed up with TJ needs to be cut at the end of the season.
Well, I disagree with both of those statements. Yeldon had the 13-yarder, which was their longest run from scrimmage. That was right up the gut. Ivory's longest run was 9 yards, and that's when he bounced it outside. So, I stick with what I'd like to see one of them, but if you say, okay, we got to pick one, I say, let's give TJ a little bit of run here, see what he can do.
Okay. This one, another question for Ryan O'Halloran. Why did Ramsey not jam Jeffries at the line? That seems like such a big part of his normal physical style of coverage. I was at the game and almost exclusively watching him on defense, and I did not once see him attempt it.
Well, it all depends on what the call was. You see what this defense does right now is they'll line up and press and then retreat before the snap, which means usually cover three. A couple of times on Jeffrey's crossing routes, Ramsey would hand him off either to a linebacker or a Gibson. So, you know, maybe that was an adjustment that he made at halftime as he wanted to make a little bit more contact. But a couple of those routes that Jeffrey caught were he was playing sort of an off/slash zone, and it were comeback routes. I think as he gets more experience, he'll become better at those.
Yeah, I think you mentioned Gibson there, and he's not a guy that we've noticed a whole lot through the first five games of the year, which is a good and bad thing. I mean, he was brought in to be a ball hawk, so you want him to be around the football probably a little bit more than he has been. But against the Raiders team this week, where I know Gus and Todd Wash both talked about it yesterday, their ability to hit the deep ball, I think this becomes not only a really good test for the secondary that they have back there, but I think it becomes a week where there's going to be an opportunity probably at some point for Gibson to make a big play for this football team, and this would be the first week that he's really been put in that kind of spotlight.
Yeah, I mean, they predicted that going into the Baltimore game because of Flacco likes to take shots, and Gibson had an interception. But when the coaches said about a month ago, say, well, they're not really, he hasn't really had a chance to be around the ball, you know, you might say, okay, that's just him, you know, them protecting their player. But when you go back and watch it, there haven't been a lot of passes down the middle of the field. Teams, when they throw long, are throwing toward the boundaries and where they can get a more favorable matchup. But Jaguar secondary is going to have their hands full on Sunday.
Listen, O'Howard, he's just solidifying his spot in second place right now. I mean, honestly, he's coalescing the vote. The base is happy with you right now. So all signs are pointing in the right direction. By the way, congrats to Chris Beck, who won a pair of tickets to go see the Jags and Raiders play this weekend here at Everbank, and he will go into a drawing along with all of our winners this season for a potential dinner with Sendarek Marks at Three Forks, and then Global Diamonds producing a set of Jaguar-themed rings as well. So one of our ticket winners will win that grand prize, but Chris is on his way to go see the Jags and the Raiders play because he was listening for our friend, the Steal the Show lady, a little bit earlier. Let's get to Gus Bradley, some of what he had to say yesterday, meeting with the media midweek, and asked about the running game and was asked specifically, have you gleaned anything from the running game in the last couple of days at practice that you can use going forward?
Yeah, I think, there's some areas it's important. I don't want to get too much into it, but I think there's some areas when you break it down, take a look at the big picture, there's some of the run concepts that we use, like the average per attempt is high. And there's some that aren't so good. And I think it's directed our attention to try to do the things that we're doing well more often. You know, we look at opportunities. Really, you know, we had two series other than the first drive in the first half and the second half. I mean, we went no huddle, and, you know, we had to, you know, kind of devote or commit ourselves to the passing game. So as far as opportunities to run the ball as well, you know, so we're factoring all that in. But there's been some things that have been showing up.
Is it as simple as that? Hey, there are certain areas where we're having more success running with certain personnel in certain schemes, and let's just cut out some of the extraneous stuff and focus on that more.
Well, to use one of the oldest cliches in the book, the other side gets paid too. And the Bears watched that Colts tape where the Jaguars pared it down to what they were doing well, ran more between the numbers, didn't do as much stretch stuff. And the Bears probably thought, hey, that worked for them. Let's do that again. Was prepared for that exclusively. So now it's time for the Jaguars to react a little bit. They got to get some stuff going outside to make teams respect the stuff around the corner. Right now, they're not getting anything going on those stretch plays. So it's a scenario for the Jaguars. And they said this last week, is even if you're having a lot of success with two or three plays, you have to run some of the other plays just to keep a defense honest.
Yeah, I think it's a really difficult question to answer right now. What is the Jaguars offense doing well? Mm-hmm. You know, and if you're in that room trying to figure out, well, this is what we do, it's what do they do? I mean, to this point in 2016, you can look back at 2015, and there were some pretty obvious answers to that question. But I think right now in 2016, it's really difficult to figure out, especially with what they're doing in the run game. And I know your follow-up to that question yesterday that we just heard the answer to was, are the issues in the run game being caused more by breakdowns from players where they're just flat-out missing their blocks or assignments, or are they just not executing the blocks that they have the opportunity to make?
I think there's, you know, Some of both. I think there's some errors. You know, when you look at perfect plays, you know, if you ran this run play 10 times, you know, how many times are 11 guys doing it perfect? And there's going to be times across the league in the NFL when you look at run game, someone might make a mistake here or there, but the back makes a miss or, you know, so I think we're just looking at the number of plays that are acceptable. Where are we at? And when you do that, you see some execution errors. You see some just assignment things that goes along with execution. And then just, you know, staying on the block longer or working up to second level, some technique things to work on. But, I mean, some of these concepts that we're doing that we looked at, the average per attempt is high. You know, so there's enough good things that we can hang our hat on.
Of the bad rushes against Chicago, I only had an unblocked guy making half of a play. So guys are – they had a hat on a hat. They just weren't beating their guy. And one example of a running play that actually worked was Ivory took the carry and ran into Julius Thomas, who had to change his route because Jeremy Parnell got pushed back. He still got 9 yards, but it just isn't one guy. That's their issue.
You know what? It sounds almost like a microcosm of last year, like we're week to week. What's the issue? Oh, we can't stop this, or we're not doing this. And it was a different thing every week. It sounds like the running game almost on play to play, week to week, drive to drive, however you want to break it down. It seems like it's not just one consistent issue that you can point to and try to fix that.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's taking their turn.
Right.
In terms of
which makes
mistakes.
For a bad situation.
Yeah, because then you can't say we're going to run behind these two guys. Well, that's not working. So you have to, you know, I mean, I'm sure they're looking at their whole plan on Monday and Tuesday saying, okay, find one thing that works. Maybe you can devise something out of that certain play.
All right, let's move on to something on the defensive side here. Asked about Miles Jack and what he has seen from him over the last 2 weeks at the auto position.
Pretty good. I think that, you know, you saw us, we split those guys or gave, you know, if it was two series for Miles, one for Scuda, just to keep Scuda a big part of it as well, because they both have different strengths. And we know as the year goes on, there's going to be games where we need, you know, to use one guy's strengths more than the other as we go on. So I think it's keep them involved in the game. We've always said that if guys are playing well, they deserve an opportunity to play. We're going to do that if we can. And I think, too, the other part of it is both those guys are playing a lot of special teams. So by getting Scuda in there some, too, it keeps them fresh not only on defense and on special teams.
The knee-jerk reaction from fans listening are probably, well, Dan Scuda doesn't need to be a part of anything. They think he provides a service. He's a little bit bigger, so maybe he holds up better against the run. He was in coverage a couple of times against Chicago, didn't embarrass himself, didn't give up a completion, I don't think. So the Miles Jack thing has settled down a little bit. It's almost like they're giving him a little bit just to get some experience, because really they know he's not going to be a strong side linebacker in the future.
Gus Bradley, speaking yesterday after practice, was also asked about his quarterback Blake Bortles and whether or not he has input regarding the game plan at the beginning of each week.
No, I think he's very involved. I think that, you know, as they put together the game plan, the quarterbacks are in there. And then as they go through the week, it's always a chance at the end of the week where they take, you know, the red pen and just cross out some plays or put some plays in order, really based on his comfort level after going through it during the week.
Is it similar to last year, or has it grown a little
bit? I think it's more. I think there's more input.
Where Blake has input is during the week. He doesn't make the decision of, okay, hey, Ole, it's time to go to Ohio.
Right, of course not.
But he always, one thing about Greg Olsen, he's always given his quarterback a lot of input in terms of, hey, here are the third down pass plays that I have for you this week. What are you comfortable with? What don't you like? What would you maybe want added? And because it's the ball's in their hand.
Sure.
So, and he goes all the way around the offense in terms of receivers and offensive linemen. So it's not that they're getting play calls that they're not familiar with. They're aware of what's going on. They just have to do it better.
All right. Let's get one more, because we talked so much about no huddle and up tempo and all these things. And this is Gus once again being asked about the use of the no huddle offense.
Again, not to to put too much out there. You know, I think you look at it and you look at the no huddle and how effective it was. And then you also look at our team and what we can sustain. You know, when you decide to go no huddle, that's something that you work on in training camp and get your old lineman ready to go. And, I mean, there's a lot that goes to it other than just the quarterback. But to have conversation about it and say, hey, this has been effective for us, you know, at times. But what's its role going forward?
Well, I always love it when he says, you know, I don't want to put too much out there. It's just like, dude, it's already out there. I mean, the players love it. You had success with it. It would almost be a further indictment of you if you don't use it on Sunday.
When the Raiders watch the film, they say, oh, look at this.
No huddle. Look at that.
Look at, and they're moving. First downs are happening here. So, hey, I get what he's saying, though. You know, you're trying to be open with the media, but without getting too specific. Even though it's out there in the ether, you don't want to have the official word come out of your mouth as to, you know, what percentage we're going to try to use.
Well, my follow-up was, I was thinking about a follow-up today. I may ask it today, is asking him, if you declared right now you're going to run one no-huddle series per quarter, what would that do for the Raiders? I mean, what advantage does that give them that they know that? Would they rest like Khalil Mack for the regular series and get him ready for no huddle? Well, then take advantage of that.
That's when I run no huddle. Yeah. They take Mack off the field. Here we go, boys.
But maybe there would be
feed the perception.
I would guess the emphasis then in the week of practice would be on, you know, let's get ready for more no huddle. You know, there would be a larger percentage of the time being spent preparing for the no huddle and what the Jags specifically try to accomplish in it. Look, coaches are paranoid, but I do get it from their point of view. I'd probably be crazy paranoid too. I'd be one of those coaches that didn't want to tell you anything. What are you asking me that for? Who are you talking about? Chris Ivory. I don't know who that is. I mean, so I think it's a tough spot a little bit for a coach to be in. It doesn't bother me that he wants to try to keep it a little bit close to the vest. All right, we'll come back, take a look at the fan feedback spotlight, among other things, where we asked you today about your favorite single game performance all time for the Jacksonville Jaguars. This on the anniversary of Keenan McCardell's 16 catch outing versus the Rams back in the 90s. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, and Ryan O'Halloran here with you. Glad you're along with us. Stick around. Midday Chalk at the top of the hour. More to do here on Jaguars Today, live at EverBank on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Jaguars Daily is brought to you by Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the official sports medicine provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
The Jaguars have been keeping close attention on rookie Miles Jack after he has switched to the auto linebacker position. Defensive coordinator Todd Walsh had a chance to talk to the media yesterday and talk about the progress of Miles Jack.
You know, he's continuing to learn the position. I think he's going on his third week of it. And, you know, with Miles, he has some strengths and Scooter has some strengths. So we try to get him in situations where those strengths can be exploited and that kind of stuff. So he's learning it, and, you know, he'll continue to be our starter out there. But we know that we got another player there with Scooter that deserves to be on the grass too. So we feel we got two really good players at that position.
This has been Jaguars Daily, brought to you by JOI. I'm Jordan DeArmond.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at EverBank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
I don't know. Jack, he's not like the excitement guy like Gus is every morning, so it's a little different from that standpoint. Jack is more like cool, you know what I mean? Like more just chilling. But he would get, you know, some of the same points across just in a different way.
That is Mercedes Lewis, one of the few who's played for both of these coaches here in Jacksonville.
It's
on the,
him, Tyson, and Paul.
Yeah, it's a very short list. On the difference between Gus and Del Rio, he's not that Mr. Excitement guy like Gus is every morning. If you're a guy like me, I'm a moody so-and-so. All right, I don't want to have Mr. Excitement guy every single day. Especially when he's your boss, but that's me. Mm-hmm. It's probably not a bad thing to do. Football is a game of emotion. Gus is a guy who's been able to keep that emotional intensity up. I think there are different ways to go about it. You got Tony Dungy, who's Mr. Cool, right? You've got Pete Carroll, who's a backslapping fool on the sidelines. And, different ways, different groups of players. The same group of players, I think, can react positively to different approaches as well. Ultimately, talent, I think, is as important as anything in the National Football League. Ryan O'Halloran?
It's about the Billies and the Joes, not the X's and the O's.
All right, the Jimmies and the Joes. Billies and the Joes. Is that some upper Midwest kind of thing you've got
Could
going
be.
On there?
What is I don't think players care what you do as a coach if they're winning.
I agree.
Honestly, I don't think they care how far you push them.
And that you're communicating with them. They don't like surprises.
They like consistency. Yeah. They don't want – you can be emotional every day. If you're emotional, if you're the same – and when we say emotional, Gus is upbeat. He's an upbeat, positive guy. If he's like that and then the next day he's killing you, it's that inconsistency. They want what they hear as well behind closed doors to be reflected in what they hear to the public, or at least they don't want it to be worse in public, right? They don't want you to say, hey, we think you're doing a good job, and then turn around and rip the guy. It's one thing to rip him behind closed doors and then kind of have a protective stance in public. But I've heard that, and I'm sure you have, Ryan and Tony, over the years as well. Tell me, be a straight shooter. Right, you can be harsh, you can be lenient, just be a straight shooter and mean what you say, and you're going to have respect, and guys can play for a guy like that. But you're right, Tony, if they're winning, what doesn't matter, if it's Dungy or Belichick or any other method in between. All right, let's take a look at some of the fan feedback spotlight today, asking folks for their all-time single-game favorite performance by a Jacksonville Jaguar. Tony, what do we get on Twitter today?
Here's what we got from Brosif. Favorite is Fred Taylor and Jones Drew rushing for 375 against the Colts. That was a sweet afternoon. From Irish Jaguar, I'm drawing a blank, but Scobie versus Baltimore on Monday Night Football in 2011 was pretty epic. From Stoff, Jimmy Smith, 15 catches, 291 against the Ravens. From Aussie Jag, November 19, 2000 in Pittsburgh, Fred Taylor rushes for 234 yards and 3 touchdowns against the hated Steelers. From T-Mock, Mojo's coming out party against Indy in 06. A fun game there. From Jarrell, Rasheen Mathis versus the Steelers in 2005, blocked a punt and had the game-winning pick six in overtime. From 13-3 Believer, for me it would have to be Jimmy Smith's 15 for 291, 3 touchdowns against that 1999 Ravens team. From Jeff, Tony Baselli against Bruce Smith and the Bills in the 96 playoffs. And finally from Alvaro, so many to choose from, but that run from David Garrard in 2007 against the Steelers to set up the win is his favorite.
Yeah, that's
none of those are from whenever I was covering the team.
Well, what is your favorite? What
it hasn't been much.
Not necessarily favorite. That may not be the way you want to phrase it. But what is there a standout single game performance that leaps out to you in your time covering the team?
Not really.
And that is why none of these people said anything.
I think the Cecil Shorts game in Cleveland 2013, where he had some drops, but then caught the touchdown to win it in the end. And then in terms of just crazy endings, it would be last year's Baltimore game.
Oh, no doubt, in terms of a crazy ending. Here are a few from the Facebook page. Jones Drew goes for 166 yards, 2 rushing touchdowns, and a kickoff return TD as the Jags beat the Colts in 2006. That one from Michael. Several people weighing in on Fred Taylor's big day versus Pittsburgh at Three Rivers Stadium. That's been mentioned as well. Fred Taylor's playoff run versus the Dolphins has been mentioned as well. Fred and Maurice combining for helping the Jags combine for over 300 rushing yards on the ground that day. Fred Taylor, Monday Night Football. Jimmy Smith, best game of his career. That was 15 catches, I think 291 and three touchdowns versus an outstanding Baltimore defense, one of the best all time. And then this one I thought was fun. Josh Wiggins said that Josh Scobie's game-winning field goal versus the Colts, my dad over in England had always poo-pooed the NFL, but told me he did want to go to a game. So I flew him over for the Colts game that year, and as we all know, the ending was one of the most memorable in Jaguars history. My dad went back to England an NFL fan, but more importantly, a Jaguars fan. Indeed, he has been known to stream Jaguars Today from merry old England. So shout-out to Scobie for helping me get the convert, said Josh. Shout out to Mr. Wiggin over in jolly old England. Hopefully you're streaming the game.
I know that was one of the coolest, like, just in-game moments because the Colts had taken the time out to try to ice Scobie in that game. And I know it was, again, it was before you were here. But TV goes to timeout, so the stands are just kind of waiting around for the kick. And they're all chanting Scobie's name, like through the entire timeout. They're just chanting Scobie, and then he goes out there and nails that kick to beat the Colts. It was a that was a really cool moment because I believe that was the week where they were the Jaguars were not great that season, but they had an opportunity against that Colts team, and we were trying to get the good mojo going for them. And I think you had actually predicted that Scobie would hit like a 58-yard field goal.
Perhaps it was sarcastic at the time.
To beat the Colts, because we were kind of joking. The Colts were coming in as like two touchdown favorites that week.
That's right.
Or something like that. So we were trying to give him the good mojo, and then 59 yards, he beats the Colts. It was unbelievable. That Monday was so much
that,
fun.
That was a lot of fun. We're, you know, just like the unlikely scenario. We're like, let's just roll with it. Let's go with it. And that's the thing about the NFL. You shouldn't, as a Jag fan, I understand the caller earlier said, hey, I've watched his team. They shouldn't be favored against anybody, and that's fine. You know what? But they're certainly capable of beating this Oakland Raider team, in my belief. By the way, speaking of the international Jag fans out there, 41 days, saw the update this morning. Aussie Jag, Irish Jag, and Staff Prime. All right, I've got family in Australia. I've got family in Ireland, and my dad used to live in London. So I got them all covered, man. It's going to be like a reunion tour when those guys come in. Will we understand one out of every five words with the accents?
Yeah, I'll give me one. I'll take one out of five. I got
all right.
That.
There you go. We'll have those guys in studio, hopefully, if we can arrange it when they come into town. Ryan, your thoughts on what's going to play out on the field on Sunday?
I think it's going to be high scoring. I had to pick. I had to make a pick on Monday for an advertisement. I picked the Raiders. I may switch that over, so I'll have both picks in one paper.
But you seem it's like a 31-28-ish kind
yeah,
of thing,
yeah,
something
yeah.
like that.
28-24, something like that. I think both offensive skill players are in line to have some good plays, but it's a big game. I mean, the next 5 days, last year, remember, they won twice in 5 days, and you know they put themselves in position before they turtled. So you get this one.
They turn.
And then you go to Tennessee next Thursday night. So
it's a good description.
It's a phrase we use a lot, but it's right in front of them now.
It's all out there. All your goals are still achievable this year for the Jags, unless one of your goals was going 16-0, and that's not achievable at this point. What does Ryan O'Halloran, Hayes Carline, and the crew have coming up in the Times Union?
We got some stuff. We got in tomorrow's paper, Philip Heilman's doing the tale of the tape we talked about at the beginning of the show. And then on Saturday, Philip's going to have something on Tyson Alualu playing his 100th game. He'll be the 24th Jaguar to do that.
How about that?
So that's a nice accomplishment for him. We had that story ready to go for a couple weeks, you know, scratched. And then we'll talk about Del Rio. Give a shout out to Brian Sexton, who helped me with that story. He picked his five top Jack wins from the Jaguars' tenure. So we'll have a graphic of that in Sunday's print edition as well.
Nice. Look forward to it, Ryan O'Halloran. We thank Rick Ballew from Midday Chalk for stopping by. We'll say hello to Rick and company coming up here in a few minutes. Ryan, just keep chanting, I'm number two. I'm number two. So I've considered you number two for quite a while as well.
Get a t-shirt for that.
Snarkily. something in the works for that. We'll get you a mug with the big number two on there. Ryan O'Halloran, ladies and gentlemen, the people have spoken. The number two most popular weekly host with room to grow. There's some upside in his numbers right there. So there he goes from the Florida Times Union. Follow him on Twitter, of course, at Ryan O'Halloran. For Fat Tony, for Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato, we'll wrap things up here from EverBank in a moment as we welcome in the boys of the Midday Chalk. Thanks once again for listening. I'm Mike Dempsey. This has been Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
The moon is going to move, and the Jacksonville Jaguars are going to be back.
You guys have a good day. Peace.